I miss a green, for example, I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. We are here live at Rich Harvest Farms for the National Championships, and we are joined by Lance Ringler of Golf Week. Lance is, you know, kind of the head honcho when it comes to college golf reporting and news. So, Lance, welcome on.
Thanks for having me, Andy.
You know, I think give the listeners a little bit about yourself and how you got into the college golf world and the golf world in general.
Well, wow, it's been it's been maybe 20 years now. I think I've been doing this. I think this is my 18th national championship. Basically, I coached college golf for 2 years at the University of Idaho, then spent a year at Iowa State University, all after I spent 2 years out caddying on the PGA Tour, or a season and a half or so on the PGA Tour. So I just kind of jumped into golf right away. I was a basketball guy originally, being from Bloomington, Indiana, but got involved with golf and then with Jeff Sagarin to create the Golf Week Sagarin Rankings. And from there, just kind of snowballed into Golf Week, and my roles and my title or position at Golf Week has evolved, and kind of just a college golf guy. So it's I enjoy it. It's a lot of fun, you know, being around the players before they get to that next level.
Yeah, I bet you got all the, you got. If you went to a tour event, you'd be like a celebrity out there.
Well, I see. The thing is, I've been to a few, and it's interesting to see how they have changed. Some of the guys are very cordial and open, and go out of their way and talk to you. Then other guys just kind of nod their head, you know. So it's because it's been a lot of them, you know, going all the way back to, you know, shoot, when Billy Horschel was in college. I'm trying to think when we really hit the scene hard. Probably about 2005-ish or 6-ish in that area is when we were doing our GolfWeekTV.com. And I used to have my daily video show off campus with Lance Ringler that we did, you know, from 2007, 8, 9. So, you know, we were way ahead of the curve with video. Now we really need to be doing that again. But and I was doing a show every day all during the spring and fall season. So I went to a lot of events. So, yeah, there'd be a few out there for sure.
Who's your favorite guy out, whether they're in college golf now or out on tour or not on tour, you know, they could be on the web or on Canadian tour.
You just mean of guys who are court, you know?
Like, you know, a few favorite guys. You know?
I would say Brian Harmon was one of the guys that was, you know, he was real good in college,
yeah.
Real down to earth.
Great junior player.
Yeah. And then when I've seen him a few times, when I've been to like the Greenbrier and such, he's just super guy. I'd say he's right at the top of the list. You know, Ricky was always good. Even I haven't seen Ricky in a few years now, but he was super in college. And I did see him one time when he was out there and very cordial. And Ricky Fowler, that is.
Yeah.
he's one of the guys in golf you can go by one name, but
not Ricky Barnes.
No, not Ricky Barnes. and I don't really have a problem with Ricky Barnes. Just you know, just when we say Ricky, you know, we know when we're talking basketball. When we say Michael, we know who we're talking about. But yeah, so it's fun. I'd like to get out to a few more pro events here and there, but you know, I like the college game.
That's great. So you mentioned you were on a bag for a year and a half.
Yeah.
Who'd you look for?
Mainly Craig Bowden.
Okay.
Craig Bowden was, I think he had his tour card maybe off and on about four times.
Is he a college coach now?
No. He works for, he's a KBS Shafts tour rep. He just a short hitter, but you know, Craig, people always marveled at Craig how he made so much money or was able to stay out there. I think he won two or three times on the Nike Tour, web.com, whatever you want to call it. He just didn't hit it very far.
You know, you bring up distance. Being out here this week, I mean, all these kids just bomb it. Have you seen like a seismic change in the last, say, 5 years? Like, when was there just a flip that?
That's a great question. I actually wrote a story last year, a little column at Eugene about the type of kids we're seeing. It changed. definitely for my time when I was following college golf in the late 80s, to probably the right around 2000, you started to see kids that didn't look like golfers. I always say that there was a year, and I think it might have been the year Texas A&M won the national championship at Inverness. That team, a few of those players looked like middle linebackers. And then, you know, they had a knack for having, you know, three, four kids that just, if they were standing in the weight room, you wouldn't have thought they were golfers. And that goes, a lot of teams have guys like that. So, yes, there's definitely been a change in the type of athletes. I mean, when they're walking around out here, you don't see many kids that don't look athletic. Mm-hmm. They're athletic-looking kids, and they do. They hit it. They hit it, they pound it, and then they just go get it. They don't. There's not a point A, point B game, really. I mean, I shouldn't say that. There's still, you know, there's course management stuff, but they ain't afraid to just rip it.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, one of my big takeaways from this week is how big these kids are. But then also, like, you talk to these kids and their schedule. I mean, their daily schedules, these kids, you know, they are professional golfers who go to a couple hours of class a day. Yeah. And, you know, they work. I mean, they are working their tails off because they obviously are, you know, they're going to class, they're studying. And that, but the, you know, listening to them talk about how they do, you know, they have body work, you know, mm-hmm. They're always making sure that their body's right, they're working out, yeah. And then they're spending 4 or 5 hours a day practicing. I mean, I imagine that this whole aspect of the game has changed dramatically.
Yeah, we can thank Tiger Woods for that. Yeah. I mean, because seriously, I mean, I'm not sure if we would have saw that movement. We probably would have eventually, but he changed that. He was a game changer. He's like Wilt Chamberlain, you know, in basketball. I mean, he changed the way people approach the way they play golf, the way they prepare for golf. And that's what these kids do now. I mean, back in the day, I mean, you know, college teams maybe in the 80s, I don't know if all of them had the strength programs, the water workouts, the yoga, the stretching, the stuff that they do. Now it is very much part. It used to be just kind of an elective thing. Now it's very much part of their daily routine, and it carries over into the pro tours.
Yeah, so it's just a launching pad, and obviously we're seeing with like Jon Rahm and a lot of more young guys making an impact quicker on tour, right. And I think a lot of it has to do with the development and the way these kids prepare out here, you know, getting ready with the programs. You know, these kids are hitting the ground running. They kind of know what to, you know, how to, you know, their lives are now a lot on the road. They're traveling. They're starting to learn how to balance life on the road. Obviously, they're in a team setting, but, right. You know, that it's these kids treat this game like professionals do to a certain extent. So, you know, for the people that are a little bit maybe less in the weeds like me and not so much me compared to you, like, who are, you know, maybe three or four names that everybody should know on the college golf circuit?
Well, obviously, it starts with Maverick McNealy. Mm-hmm. You know, he's the one kid who's been around a while, you know, senior now at Stanford. He's the kid who, you know, followed in the footsteps of Patrick Rogers and the kid that, you know, you expect to be out there mm-hmm. at some point, whether or not, you know, there's always been a lot of talk if he's even going to turn pro just because he's, I guess he's just so smart. He could just jump into the real world and change people's lives. But he's one kid. Obviously, Sam Burns is a tremendous talent. If you've had a chance to watch him play, he's one that we're expecting to announce he's going to be turning pro after the championship or at least sometime this summer. He's one. The other thing, I'm not sure that we're going to see a lot of this class jump right out there. There's a few more players in the Wyndham Clark, obviously has been up there, that had a tremendous year. There's some kids that that haven't played as well as I thought they might have. But I'm not sure how deep this class is really, mm-hmm. you know, but there's always going to be a few names. And then there's always the names. I mean, you know, JT Poston, who's out there now, you know, kids like there's going to be a kid or two that come out of this group somewhere down the line that pop out there and turn heads and play well.
So, you know, JT Poston is one of my favorite stories of the rookies on tour just because he, you know, he went under-recruited. He ended up winning the state championship. Right. Then he got recruited, but he'd already signed with Western Carolina. And, you know, he became the first kid in Western Carolina history to make it to the NCAAs.
Right.
So who would you say is kind of these players, like maybe a guy that goes to a smaller school that you wouldn't be surprised to see make it out on tour?
That's a tough one. Because that's so hard to predict. I remember I used to every year at the end of the year, I'd come up with a list of names of, like, you know, five or six guys that I thought were can't miss kids. And I remember looking back, I haven't done it in a while, but I remember looking back at that list and I was like, huh, none of those kids have made it. I mean, so it's really, really hard to predict. I mean, especially when you start digging down deep, the first kid that will jump out in that, from a small school, and I'm not sure if he's a small name, but Dawson Armstrong,
mm-hmm.
You know, he's the first kid. He kind of fits that bill. He fits that bill of those kids, you know, like JT Poston. So that would probably be the one kid everyone would kind of look at who's playing college golf now.
Yeah, Dawson Armstrong, so he plays at Lipscomb.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the story? Why did he, you know,
school? I think it was the same thing. I think he was a little bit under-recruited, and I'm not exactly sure on why he ended up at Lipscomb, but, I mean, I'm assuming he was under-recruited, you know, and a lot of kids, they hit their peaks different times. I mean, there's a lot of kids that end up getting to college, and they don't pan out either.
Yeah,
so.
I grew 3 inches in college, exactly. And all of a sudden hit the ball for 40 yards further.
Yeah.
I was a different player.
Exactly.
So, you know, in today's a pivotal day. We're cutting to top 15, and then tomorrow we cut to the top 8. You know, a lot of the big favorites have moved up and into position. A few, you know, like, you know, Stanford is probably the biggest surprise outside the top 15. You know, what are your big takeaways from the tournament so far?
I think if we just talk about the biggest headline right now, I think is the fact that these kids are scoring so well.
Yeah.
That's probably the big, sometimes in golf, unlike other sports, the golf course becomes the story. And it happens all the time in the majors, especially early on in the week until we get to the day when they actually crown a champion. I think so far, I think the story's really been the golf course. I mean, because it was so difficult during the women's event, and I still don't think that they failed on the setup on the women, even though they probably played the par threes collectively too long. They probably could have done a few things with some tee locations or some tee spots and some hole locations to make it easier. I still will say that I think that the conditions were the biggest reason for the high scoring for the women. But for the men, I think what happened, and I could be a little bit off on this, they could have had a lot of this set prior to coming here because they were afraid it was going to be so difficult. I mean, that's what all we talked about. The rough's going to be high. The greens are going to be fast. They're small greens for some of the clubs that you have in your hand. I think the NCAA committee wisely erred on, let's see some red numbers. I mean, look at these scores. I mean it's, you can just look at them. You know, I wouldn't have I honestly, Andy, I would have thought that there might have only been one or two teams under par at this point in time in the tournament. Mm-hmm. And that is probably the biggest story right now is that they're playing so well. I would have thought that today they would have tightened the screws a little bit,
mm-hmm.
done some things to make it a little more difficult. But
the flags were in tough positions today. I was out there, and I mean, it was really impressive. I mean, Rico Hoey had it 7-under through 11. He almost was 8. I mean, he just missed an eagle putt. But – you know, I think the biggest thing, and we see it week in, week out on the PGA Tour, is that when the golf course is soft, you know, and this place has taken a lot of rain, which, you know, it makes the fairways soft, so they're easier to hit. You can be a little bit more aggressive off the tee because of these fairways, your ball's not bounding through into the rough. And then also, likewise, on the greens, they're very receptive. You know, when the conditions are soft, every golf course gets lit up now on tour. I mean, even to the extent of Oakmont had record low scores last year because of how soft it was. So, you know, this, I think that plays a part in it. But also I do agree, like, they haven't played all the tees back, which is, you know, really good. You know, outside of, you know, the 17th hole, no hole has really just, maybe the 17th hole might be the hole of any hole I've ever seen with more just massive numbers from guys high on the leaderboard.
It's the 17th hole. I mean, I mean, I coached for 3 years. I caddied for a couple. I could be crazy when I say this, but I'd play this hole. I would not hit driver off the tee. I'd put it in the fairway.
Yeah.
I would literally wedge it to another spot, and then from that spot, I would wedge it back onto the green and try to make four that way. If not, I'm walking out of there with a five.
Yeah.
Going at it from 180 to 210, there's little room for error on that hole.
Yeah.
So, and I think, you know, in match play, that 17, 18 is going to be a heck of a finish because you have, well, starting at 16.
Even 15.
15 is not playing. We actually played the other day. 15 I thought was going to be a much more difficult hole for them
than what it is.
And there's enough room
from the water
to the green. So really starting 16, 17, 18, that could be an electric finish in match play.
Getting through that stretch, one or two under par is just unbelievable playing. Yeah. It's interesting. You know, I was watching Nick Hardy today. He birdied, made a great birdie on 16, and then he parred 17, and then he gets to 18, and sure enough, he gets caught on the downslope, and he makes an 8. You know, it's like that. You would thought he got through the tough part, one under. Oh, he's going to finish two under. It's going to be a heck of a finish. Ends up making an 8. I think that's one of the things with this golf course is that as soon as you lose your focus or get out of position and make a, you know, an aggressive play from out of position, you bring in double, triple, quadruple bogey even on almost any hole out here, which is that's what this leaderboard can change so rapidly as they look to go from now 15 teams down to 8 teams.
Right.
So, you know, as it stands, you know, Vanderbilt's in the lead at 18 under, and then, you know, there is some bunch up until, I'd say, what do you say, Florida State at 12, which is, they're in 12th place at 4 under.
Right.
And all these teams are kind of fighting for this top 8 position to make into match play. You know, who would you say of the teams currently out that you expect to get into this top 8?
That's a tough question. I just wrote my column today. Two years ago at the concession, no teams from the top 8 went into the top, or no teams from 9 to 15 went into the top 8. But last year we had 3 teams. The difference last year from 9th place to 15th place was just 9 shots. We're going to see a little bit wider gap this year, probably more like 15 shots from all the way down. But, you know, wherever, you know, if Pepperdine and UCF are those final two teams, that's going to be a tough task for them tomorrow. Oregon's definitely got the firepower. I'd say you go all the way down to Oregon with a really good round. But after that, you know, Florida State, Texas, LSU, they could all jump up in there. Auburn had a bad day today. They've been playing really well. Qualifying out of West Lafayette Regional to get here. So, you know, they can, especially like you said, if it's soft, if it continues to stay soft, but it should be drying up a little bit. But, you know, it all takes is one good round from somebody. Somebody goes out and shoots, you know, 10, 12 under, they'll probably jump up the board a lot.
Mm-hmm. So it's in terms of kind of who your favorite teams out here, which teams are, you know, would you say, you know, if you were going to, I know you don't like to make any predictions
for
in match play.
It's tough.
But, like, who's your team that you look at and say, you know, this is the team I think is going to put it all together?
Well, it's tough, Andy. I mean, Vanderbilt's really good.
Yeah.
They're really good 1-5. I think that they play a little bit. They're going to be a little tight. I honestly do. They've not had a lot of success in match play. I think that they're a tight bunch. I just don't know how they'll perform. I like Oklahoma. They're a loose bunch. You know, last year was the first year they made it into match play. They got in the 8th spot after a heck of a round last year in the final round at Eugene. They shot, I believe, the lowest round or the next to lowest round of the day to get in. I like Oklahoma. UNLV's been a quiet team all year, a bit sneaky. So I actually picked UNLV and Oklahoma to make it into my top 8. So those two teams don't surprise me. USC's good. I mean, they're the one team that if they do have an advantage coming into match play this year, just with what they've went through the last 2 years, they should have won a title in one of those last 2 years. Mm-hmm. Probably should have won a title. So they're going to be tough. And then Illinois. I mean, I honestly didn't expect this out of Illinois this week. You know, and people can talk all along. I mean, let's talk about it. If I have somebody out there following me around, Andy cheering for me, am I going to play any better? I mean, probably not.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so sure, can it lift you? Can it give you some confidence? Absolutely. They're elite players. I mean, they've got people cheering for them. I don't put a lot of stock into home crowds in golf. Northwestern, we talked about that last week. Look, they didn't have big crowds out here the first couple days. They didn't have anybody watching. There was nobody out here. It was 40 degrees. They played well because they're a good team, and they were familiar with the environment. And that's why Illinois, the same thing. They're a good team. They're playing well. They've caught a high right now. I don't think that to this point the crowd has really given them that much of an edge. Now in match play, I think it could, because we've seen it in Ryder Cup situations when you get a crowd going. But I'll tell you what, I'm really impressed with that Illinois crowd because of the way they're very golf knowledgeable. It seems like last year in Oregon, they weren't very nice. Like when Texas and Illinois hit shots that were good, they didn't clap. Yeah. There wasn't a lot of but today I've seen the Illinois fans really cheer on the other teams.
Well, I mean, it has a lot to do with Illinois and Chicago being one of the great golf cities.
True.
You know, obviously, like Chicago, the game kind of started in Chicago for in America. So right. I think you're in one of the golf meccas of the state.
The other thing, let me interrupt you here real quick. Just looking at the leaderboard, Oklahoma State and Baylor at the sixth. Who the heck would want to play those guys?
Oh, God.
And Oklahoma State, I mean, they've
got the best.
I mean, they're six shots out of lead, and they're unbelievable.
And they Baylor, have the best starting five rank-wise.
And Baylor, I would not want to be, the three or four or the two or three and have to play Oklahoma State or Baylor.
Virginia, Jimmy Stanger, I watched him play some holes. He's really impressed me. I don't know. He's got to be one of the best 10 players in college.
Yeah, Jimmy's. Yeah, he had a phenomenal fall. Derek Bard too. Yep. They have two, and they have a third. They have a couple that they could get some things done too. Mm-hmm. So you know
they're a little light at the back end.
They're
the
a lot of light.
I feel like that's really where, and obviously you know like it's where the kind of separates the truly elite teams like the Oklahoma States, the Southern Cals, the Vandys are kind of almost like a clear echelon of they've got five. Right. Really strong. There's no question marks in those lineups.
No, and then that's the thing. I mean, you keep going down, and you got Texas is good. Mm-hmm. They'll be good. Florida State can play Oregon. I mean, there are. It's like we've said all season long. You can go about 14, 15 deep, and we're seeing it this week. And there's going to be a couple really good golf teams left out of match play tomorrow. And I think this year's match play could be it. You get any one of those eight teams, just like the last couple of years, any one of those eight teams could win, maybe even more so than what we've seen in the past.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of kind of surprises, is there anybody that's surprising you on this list outside of, I know you've said Illinois, but outside of that?
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not like Illinois is a big secret. I mean, I just didn't expect them to play as well as they. I thought they would be fighting more to get into that top eight, and they still got a round to go. But I mean, the biggest surprise to me really is probably Kent State. I thought Kent State would not, and I did pick them to make it into the top eight. It's not a usual. I just thought they'd be a little bit more in this week. Yeah, but other than that, no. I mean, there's not a lot of surprises.
I'll tell you what. I mean, Kent State. I picked them as one of my sleepers too, and I getting to see that team, you think Kent State and most people are probably going to say, oh, it's a small school.
Right.
This is a legitimate golf school. Kids, when you talk about seeing kids that don't look like golfers,
right.
I don't know if there's a team that typifies them more. And all those kids just smash it.
Yeah. And the thing about Kent State is this is one of Herb Page's better teams that he's had. Maybe, I don't want to say ever. I'd have to go look, I'd have to do some research on that. But this is definitely one of his better teams. So I'm a little surprised on that. A lot of people are going to talk about Stanford missing. But I'll tell you what, Andy, you go look at the results. Stanford's not like they've been real good in the postseason here. Mm-hmm. You just let the results speak for themselves. It's a program that has high expectations, and they've missed a few times here lately.
It seems like all year long, kind of, and it goes, this whole storyline is like the back half of that lineup all year was when they were on, they were good. When they weren't, and that's where, the interesting thing about, college golf and, when we look at like a bigger landscape view is like, putting together team championships, like it's really hard to get four guys playing well all at once. And I think, in terms of this, for the Olympics, like, why didn't this happen for the Olympics?
Oh, that's major, colossal whiff. Mm-hmm. In fact, when I first heard about the format for the Olympics, I didn't believe it. I mean, I don't know. The format for the Olympics was bad. I mean, team golf is, I don't even know. It's just bad. Don't even know what else to say about that. I can't believe that they they didn't go more of that route, honestly.
Yeah.
And it's not like they didn't have any knowledge of it. I mean, they've seen the Ryder Cup. They've seen, you know, how team golf works in certain situations. And I think in an Olympic setting, team golf would have been fantastic.
Do you think there could be ever a potential and for an alumni-like event for professionals like this?
I think there's been a lot of tinkering around with some things trying to make something happen with professionals and current players.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a few years ago, Eric Soderstrom and myself, Eric worked at Golf Week. He's now works for Titleist. We talked about doing we were going to write a column and do a big thing and talk about a professional golf league. And we were going to come up with, you know, 10 to 12 cities, and we were going to come up with nicknames, and they would actually have a draft and make this mock PGA league with cities and conferences and stuff. So that would be cool.
Yeah.
But do I think it'll maybe a one-off event? I don't see it, honestly. It's just there's too much money involved. There's these guys and their agents and their teams and, you know, their schedules. Probably not, unless it's like a hashtag spring break 2019 and six guys just go goof around. I don't ever see anything official.
I think it would be cool to see. This format, I think, is really great because, you know, what you see is that, you know, like, you can have an individual lighting it up, but like if one of his teammates who's a county score makes an eight all of a sudden, it completely changes the landscape of the team. It's a very, very cool event.
Yeah.
So coverage is on tomorrow. You know, say I'm a first time college golf viewer tuning in. What should I be kind of watching for? What are some basic things I should know tomorrow?
Well, what you're watching for, what's exciting about it is what you just hit on. It's just the team aspect of college golf. So many people view golf as an individual sport. And in this setting, you'll see a lot of kids looking back at their teammates, fist pumping, coaches, you know, running back and forth, you know, helping, giving information on based on what they saw from the previous player that played the hole. The team aspect is probably what would be the most different if you're used to watching a PGA Tour event. It's the way they'll interact and the way they're playing for their team. You don't see that in individual golf when you're watching a PGA Tour event.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. I mean, it's infectious. I think if your school's anywhere near the hunt, it's a must tune in.
Right.
I think that's the cool thing. It brings a lot of casual golf fans into it. So tell me, if you could make one change to college golf in general, what would it be?
That's a good question. There's a lot. I mean, that question was probably really easier several years ago before we started tinkering with the formats and doing things. But if I was commissioner for a day, I would the thing I would change immediately was I would come up with some sort of format. There has to be. We have to standardize college golf. We can't allow all these different formats. When you watch a college football game, you know what it's going to be. It's going to be four quarters, 15-minute four quarters. That's what it's going to be. When you watch a college basketball game, you know it's going to be two 20-minute halves. I'm sure when there's a baseball or softball game, seven innings, nine innings, there's standardized formats to it, and you don't change the way it's scored. It's always, you know, a three-pointer is always 3 points. A touchdown is always six and an extra point. In college golf, you might see a 36-hole event. You might see an event where there's six players count five. You might see an event where all five players play together instead of, and it's just, while each one of those events, they're doing the same thing in that event, but that has direct conflict with everything else that's going on. For example, when California had their tremendous year a few years ago, I think they won two, maybe three, but definitely two six count five events. Well, they have a better six player than a lot of players.
Yeah.
So when you add that element to it, that's like saying, you know, what if you played a basketball game and took the 3-pointer away?
Yeah.
You'd have some different winners.
Yeah. Bulls would be really good.
You would have some different winners. So college golf, it's when you think about it, it's crazy. And it's crazy that you'll count an 18-hole event when that's like playing a quarter and a half in football.
Mm-hmm.
It's ludicrous that it counts and it goes into the system, because we all know that in 18 holes, I might one day in 18 holes be able to beat you, Andy. Mm-hmm. Doubtful. But I might. You could get squirrely, and I could go out there and
shoot. Oh, I can shoot a big number.
I could shoot a 78 maybe, and you could get squirrely, and I could beat you. But we know that if you and I played 54 holes, I'm not beating you. I'm just not doing it. That's what needs it. That's a big issue, I think, in college golf. And I don't think they realize how big of an issue it is
until you get to regionals, right, and then all of a sudden there's these.
Getting into regionals. Because you have such a fine line between teams that are ranked 75th and teams that are ranked 50th. And some of that squirrely stuff in there, it's easy. Just standardize the format. Mm-hmm. Say minimum of 36 holes to be a ranked event. Maximum of 54 holes, and everything has to be 5-count 4. Mm-hmm. Everything.
What about match play tournament?
They shouldn't count. Yeah. This is fun and exciting and everything and whatever, but we all know the number one seed, whoever's won the stroke play, has never won in all the time since 2009. And now the women, again, it didn't happen. Northwestern was the number one seed. They didn't win. That being said, Arizona State was the number one team in the country in the Golf Week rankings. They weren't in Golf Stat, but they were in Golf Week, and they did win. And we have seen the number one team win in men's golf, and Texas did it once. I think Alabama did it once. Mm-hmm. But they didn't win the stroke play that year.
So do you think there should be a stroke play championship?
Oh, yeah.
There is.
What happens tomorrow?
Yeah.
There really is.
There's
no trophy for it.
Yeah, because, like, I'm an Illini fan. I went to Illinois.
Yeah.
We've won the individual, but we haven't won the team. And to me, it's like we won the stroke play.
Yeah.
Like that is every shot counts.
Yeah.
That is
the
real championship to a certain extent.
Yeah. It should. I mean, I like watching the match play. I like the head to head. I mean, I'd like, why not make all of college golf match play? Just do away with stroke play. It never happened.
That's the way they do it in England.
Yeah, just do away with it completely. Think about the schedules. It'd be so cool. You know, you're going to – I've already got it figured out. I need to write this column this summer. But, you know, instead of having – you know, say you got a tournament like Southern Highlands out in Vegas. So instead of inviting 15 teams in, you only invite 6.
Mm-hmm.
And you play each team plays 2 matches a day, and then the last day they play 1 match. So at the end of the tournament, you've played 5 head-to-heads. So, and it's a round-robin deal. So if you go 5-0, you've won the tournament.
Yeah.
And now the standings and the rankings, you now have, you know, you might have Vanderbilt ranked number one in the country with a record of 27-6.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It is.
And that would be neat.
And every match counts.
And it would change the dynamics of college golf. You would have teams now you get that team like Illinois State or Bradley in the Missouri Valley, and they go in and play Vanderbilt on a weekend or Georgia, and they get a win. I mean, now you know, it's the great equalizer.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be cool. It'd be really cool.
It would make it more happen. Like basketball.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. And then think about a 64-team tournament.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have your regionals. You have 4 teams. We've tinkered around with it before, but, you know, basically you have 4 regional sides, 16 teams there, and say the top 4 from the regional advance to the national championship, where now you have 16 teams. So it's a sweet 16. Mm-hmm. Instead of just bringing 4 teams in, it'd be cool. It'd be really neat.
It'd be interesting. That's an interesting idea. I love match play, and it would actually change the dynamic though of how these kids would play.
Yes,
because you'd get a lot more aggressive play.
And what it would do is I honestly think it would broaden the fan base. It would broaden. It would make the sport more popular on the campus.
Yeah,
because when Auburn goes and plays at the Carpet Capital. I'm just using this hypothetically. And they go down there and it's 15 good teams. And they finish 8th.
Yeah.
They played all right. They've had a good finish. They might have beat a couple top 10 teams. They come home, nobody cares.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys finished 8th. No, it doesn't even mean anything. Nobody even talks about it.
Hey, we beat the top team in the country.
Now they go in there and they play match play and they beat Georgia Tech or Georgia or whoever, you know, UCLA. They come home. Oh, you guys had a great weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, you beat UCLA and they were, you know, wow, you beat UCLA, you know. It's different. So there's the common fan can identify with it better.
Yeah, that's it. I never thought of that.
Yeah,
I'm not the common fan. That's why I don't think about these things.
Yeah, because you follow it anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. One idea I had, something that I always wonder about is like, you know, these regionals. Like, mm-hmm. you got teams that are some of the best teams in the country that aren't here this week because they had a bad week at regionals.
Right.
Do you think that there should be any place for auto bids? Similar to the NCAA tournament, where, you know, if I just say Florida, for example, top 5 team all year, had, you know, some of the biggest wins. They aren't here, even though they have some of the best players in the country.
I don't think so. With college, with the NCAA basketball tournament, if you're the one seed, you have to play the 16 seed in the first round.
Uh-huh.
And even though a number one seed's never lost in basketball, they still have to win to get
there. 2-15
But the 2-15 has, and they've lost to the 8-9 team in the next round. So I don't think there's, once the tournament starts, it's the tournament. So no, I don't think you should, I mean, I don't think anybody should get a free pass out of regional to here. No, I wouldn't agree with, I wouldn't want to see that.
So to switch gears a little bit, I'm curious with, you know, who's been your the most surprising guy that you've covered that hasn't made it to tour yet?
That we actually talked about that this week with someone. So the biggest name, and I actually have a good answer for this, the biggest name player that I'm surprised that we never saw get out on tour and win is Matt Giles from Southern California. I don't know if you remember Matt.
Yeah.
He's actually from New Zealand. The kid was really good, amateur player and college player. I don't even know what he's doing now. I don't even know if he's still playing golf. I haven't seen his name forever. That's probably the one kid that never got out on tour that was probably the most surprising because I just thought he was, you know, and he was part of that USC team in 2009 that lost to Michigan at Inverness.
Yeah.
See, that's another thing. I just said that, right? 2009 team that lost to Michigan at Inverness. I wouldn't have remembered anything if it was match stroke play.
Yeah.
But match play, I went to the championship from 2000 to 2008.
You don't remember a lot.
I remember Oklahoma State winning at Sun River. I don't remember anything about it except them standing there for the picture, honestly, Jonathan Moore.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Clemson winning at Stillwater.
Was that DJ Trahan? Yours?
Yeah. But I don't remember things about the tournament. Now that match play is going on, I remember all kinds of things.
Yeah.
The shots.
Mm-hmm.
People running to see. I mean, you remember it's that, and that's the thing. So I go back to my thing again, match play all year long.
It's I mean, it would make just the week to week thing way more exciting.
Yeah.
Is so you'd have just 18 hole matches. So over a weekend, you'd play 3 18 hole matches.
Actually, you could maybe play six.
Uh-huh.
You could maybe play six. It'd be two a day, two a day, two a day.
It'd be very tiring.
It would be. But what, look at this week.
Yeah.
You know, but you could do, under the current format, you could play 18. You could play 36, 36, 18.
Uh-huh.
But you could do it. I mean, it could be done.
So, you know, we got a couple. We'll do one more question, and we'll get you out of here on overrated, underrated. Last question is, you know, what's your favorite, whether it be amateur or college event of the year? What's your favorite one?
Favorite event? Well, obviously this is probably the favorite event because this is the Super Bowl.
I really
enjoy going to the All-American Classic in El Paso. That was always a lot of fun. Yeah, the Sun Bowl All-American Classic, that's always a fun one to go to, just because it's just the laid-back atmosphere of it. The kids are there without their team. It's kind of ironic because it's a team game, but it's just a fun event for me. The food's fantastic. I base a lot of my events, Andy, on the food where I'm going. It's a big deal.
Good barbecue big down deal. There.
Oh, just good steaks, good Mexican food down there. Just just that's a good event. It's probably one of my favorites. But a lot of them are good. A lot of them are the hospitality, and the thing about those events, Andy, they're once a year, so usually they roll it out when they do it.
And El Paso, that's a big deal coming down there.
It is.
So our fried egg tradition is overrated, underrated.
Okay.
So I'm just going to give you a couple things here, and you say overrated, underrated.
All right.
You know, what you think. Ball striking.
Just ball striking.
Is it overrated
or
underrated?
I think it's totally underrated. I mean, totally overrated.
Yeah.
Totally overrated. I mean, Jay Coffin, my good friend at the Golf Channel, used to be a boss at Golf Week. Whenever they, you know, Chad Campbell, what a great ball striker. Well, what the hell does that mean? I mean, aren't they all good ball strikers?
Yeah.
Sure, some guys hit it squirrely. No, so when you ball striking, overrated.
I think it's just become a commodity. Watching these kids hit it really good.
It's easy to say. It's just ball striking. Whatever.
And it's like the kids that really get it done are the ones that get it done on and around the greens.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's the difference between Sam Burns and, you know, the number three guy on UNLV.
Aren't you, if you're on the PGA Tour, aren't you probably a pretty good ball striker?
Yeah.
Enough said.
How about Illinois' three-man, Eduardo Liparelli?
He's probably underrated.
super underrated.
Yeah, super underrated. I mean, you Dylan Meyer, Nick Hardy. The thing about Illinois golf, for every year, I always said, they're rebuilding.
Yeah.
They've just been reloading.
Yeah.
They've been reloading, and he's part of that, of a reloading structure.
I have been blown away by this Kids game this week. I think
didn't he win earlier this year as an individual?
Yeah. I think so.
At Olympia, or somewhere in the fall. I thought he played as an individual and won.
I honestly think he could have the most. I'm a huge Nick Hardy and Dylan Meyer fan. I think he might have the most talent of any kid on that roster.
If Illinois wins this week, I bet he might have to go 3-0.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting. Year over year, Mike Small, what amazes me is how much he develops his players.
Yeah.
And no kid gets worse.
No, and the other thing about Mike Small, how many years has he been there now? Is it 18, 17?
Something like that.
Okay, and I might be off on my numbers, but the first 6 or 7 years, they didn't do much. He was developing the program.
Yeah.
Now that he developed the program into what it is, now he's doing, so it goes to show you, it took him a while to build what he wanted to build.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a critic. When they hired Mike Small, I thought it was a joke. I'll say it. I mean, I really did. And that was more of the, why would a guy, because it's never worked in other sports.
Yeah.
You think about all the great players that have gotten head coaching jobs in football or basketball. It hasn't always worked. And most times it's failed more than not. In golf, I always thought that was going to be a bad move. And boy, was I wrong. There's been Chris Ambry, Conrad Ray, mm-hmm. At Stanford, Mike Small. There's been a lot of former players that didn't have coaching experience that jumped into it and have done well.
That Chris Nalen mm-hmm. is now at Arizona. That's amazing that program is.
Well, Jim Anderson's at Arizona. Yeah.
Oh, I thought it wasn't Nalen.
No, Jim Anderson. He's Texas A&M assistant.
Whatever. I'm.
He played at Arizona.
So, anyways, Lance, thanks for coming on, and we'll be excited about a busy day tomorrow. Yep. Follow Lance on Twitter. Are you on Instagram?
Golf Week Ringler on Twitter. Then Instagram, we just Golf Week Mag.
Golf Week Mag. Your company, man.
Everything is all golf. I just do it all through our Twitter. But we do have a good Instagram with Golf Week Mag.
Golf Week Mag.
Yeah.
So, we'll be out here and fire any questions you have at one of us, and we'll answer them away. But thanks again.
Thanks, Andy.